3, 2, 1, see ya.
You're listening to the Beast Life Podcast with your hosts, Randy and Brian.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, welcome back, Jack. Welcome to another Base Life Podcast.
Yay, second one.
Yeah.
I'm a veteran.
Yeah, yeah, last night was fun. I'm curious to see how that edit goes.
kind of sloppy.
Yeah.
Five people all drinking.
Yeah, and talk. I mean, it'll be fine. I mean, that's what base jumpers do sometimes.
Yeah.
So now it's three people drinking.
Mm-hmm. And talking, but... Yeah, I mean, I guess this isn't my first beer of the day, but it's the first one that really counts.
That's how we categorize it. It's the first one that counts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I ran 2 miles after the first beer of the day and then did a hike and a jump, so I think I probably burned that one off.
Oh, yeah. That's just fuel.
Yeah, just carbs.
Fuel time.
Yeah. What'd you guys get into today?
We went to a friendly little place called Tracks Lounin. After we left you, that was kind of nice. one of our friends has taken it over. So she's, I don't know.
Running the hotel and restaurant up at the top of the back of the valley.
Yeah, it's nice. Secluded, but plenty of hikers walking through. Had a beer. Had some cheesy bread, classic Swiss cuisine. So yeah, it was nice. Dropped off the client's bags. But after that, we came down, and then we waited for you.
Yeah, thanks for waiting.
No worries.
Yeah, so that's part of the Lauterbrunn Adventure. I guess, for Lisa and...
Yeah, it's like, I mean... It's early days, but every job is different, right? So they have different clients that are looking for different things, but it's kind of like a valley concierge.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys that are up at the moment, it's a 6-day hike tour, but it's a little bit of the silver spoon attitude. So it's like, you hike, we will take your bags, and you can just turn up at a hotel. And they were a bit weird.
Yeah.
They're just strange.
Yeah.
But
rich Americans.
Yeah.
Were they gassed out? Because they were supposed to go.
They didn't seem gassed out.
No. Today I realized that they actually didn't do too much hiking. They went from Wengen down to Lauterbrunnen, which I don't know if they hiked. And then they did like the valley tour. So they went to see Trommelbach. And so it wasn't hiking.
Right.
It's just walking through a valley. Which is all good.
Yeah. No, the real shit starts tomorrow.
I feel like, you know, when you see like fat people lose weight and you have a before and after picture, you should have like an emotional chart before and after. Yeah, we hike. Yeah. We realize we don't hike. It's like, so, but people and stuff.
That's cool. You started your own, venture out here as well, right?
Oh yeah, Bettier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was it all kind of came about in a weird way because I lived in London for 12-ish years and everything was corporate, like not corporate in the sense of finances and stuff, but corporate in the sense of a sit down behind a desk, 7-day sort of job, getting called up all the time. And it was fun, but it quickly turned into golden handcuffs. It's like, yeah, like work extra for more money, but do you actually get any more? I don't know. So I came over here and sacked in the whole animation media campaign style and decided to, I don't know, follow a little bit more of a dream and do a bit of woodwork. So hence Metier was born. And we came up with the word métier because it in French it's kind of like it doesn't translate perfectly as far as I know, but it's like your hobby, your passion, your desire everything that's important to you. So if someone's really good at jumping, it would could be their métier.
Mm.
But if someone's really good at being an arsehole, it could also be their métier. It's, it goes both ways, sort of thing. So, yeah, and we build furniture, custom stuff. It's hands-on.
Yeah, you've had some pretty big projects.
Yeah, they never felt big at the time, but now I look back and I feel how achy my bones are and stuff. Like, that's definitely larger than we probably should have done at the early days. But I mean, that's business 101, but I don't like reading, so I found out late. So, yeah, there was, we did some really cool jobs. We had a great client in Grindelwald at the Glacier Hotel, and they just gave us not creative freedom, but they trusted us. And also at the time, like, we were undercutting, not knowingly, but every Swiss person around. We did a first job and it was like 50 grand and we were like, whoa, 50 grand, this is amazing. And then after we did the job and we were like, okay, we didn't make as much money as what we thought. We sort of got in contact with a few companies to be like, how much would it cost to make this? And they were like, oh, okay, the welding would be 7 to 10 grand. And we were like, oh, we did like all 5 of those for less than that.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's why I got burnt out, because, you know, like trying to do all of that work.
Mm-hmm.
I like physics, right? And there's a point where you can't bend physics beyond 24 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. And you realize, yes, my bones are tired and my muscles do have fatigue. So, but I mean, I still love it. It's just one of those challenges that you're going to find out as you shit your pants. So.
Yeah, it seemed like Brian and I would come down and we would always see you covered in sawdust and, working on something.
In fairness, that is also kind of like a cloaking disguise for being in the valley. I was trying to be here? A bit of the day walker.
What's up?
TJ!
Hello!
What's your second name? Jay.
What's up, buddy?
You want to join us? Want to hop on? Okay.
No, it was just the draft. TJ never came here.
Never heard of him.
That was Sanchez, the ghost that lives in this place.
Yeah. I like the idea of Sanchez the ghost. Yeah.
Sancho.
He's nice. Sancho. Mostly nice.
But yeah, no, it was basically, it's partially doing the work. You get covered in dust and, pardon me, I'm a messy worker, but that's just the way that my brain works. But as a side effect, it was also camouflage. Like, because as soon as I started wearing work clothes and grew a beard and was covered in sawdust, the farmers would drive past and be like, give me the wave, give me the finger.
You got the finger.
Yeah, I always the just wanted to like, leave. Oh, the two finger, and then there's the one finger. You got the one finger's like
the one where you're like, whoop.
Yeah,
just one finger off the driving, like the
steering
wheel.
Oh, yeah, the hand doesn't even come off the steering wheel. Right. That's like the golden ticket, I think, at the moment, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it wasn't actually, God, I was here for like 2 years, and then we were at the cow parade. I was telling this story the other day, but the farmers started talking to me, just like full in Swiss German, like bloody, bloody, blur, and I was like, ah, cool, but I don't understand. And I could just piece together enough German to let them know that. And then he just jumped straight into English. He's like, oh, you're not Swiss. I was like, yeah, I'm English. And for the 2 years that I've seen him and I've been around him but never interacted, they just thought I was a grumpy Swiss guy. And like, yeah, they just
you're thought, like, I fucking made it.
Yeah, and I blew it. I blew it by saying, no, I don't speak. If I just kept my mouth shut and was like, ugh, and just start shoveling shit, I'd probably be fine. I'd be like, I'd be in the commander now as the president. So, I think that's how it works.
Job opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you do, like, woodwork, welding, graphic design. Like, it seems like there are so many unique aspects to, like, your interests and
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a simple story, but it's also complicated because I feel like, I don't know, I was a serial hobbyist. And I don't think I would have been unless I lived in London, because I think deep down I always hated the idea of being stuck to a city. Like, there's, I mean, again, that's why I moved over here, because there was this opportunity to be something different. But whilst I was in the city, I had a lot of money coming in, like director of your own company. And like every year it's like, hey, here's 30 grand tax free. And you're already getting paid a good salary. So it's like, what toys can I buy?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd find myself in the middle of a busy project. I'd be doing like an Elton John campaign or something like that. And I'd be like, wow, this is boring as fuck. And whilst I was doing that, I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to do a test render. It's going to take 10 minutes. Those 10 minutes I'd spend thinking, what do I want to do this weekend? And I'd be like, oh, I want to do ceramics. And I've always been one of those people that just loves to, I don't know, get involved. And I don't read instructions. I don't kind of learn the proper way. But it also helps having loads of fun, because you're like, oh, okay, I've just bought a kiln and a pottery wheel and like 100 kilos of clay. It's like, and you spend the whole weekend making pots and stuff, and you're like, sweet. And then you go back to work, and then middle of the week you do another project, and you're like, what can I do this weekend? So I got no money to show for anything. But like I say, serial hobbyist, love doing stuff. And I think that love of physics and science and how things work always comes back to, what else can you do? Because
mm-hmm.
It's never just like, oh, wake up, do a job, go to sleep, die. Like, it's mm-hmm. There's got to be something else, right? And I never had that when I was growing up. It was always like, my mum would be like, you have to get a trade. Like, here's, do maths, science, and English. I was like, I'm dyslexic, I hate numbers, and like, English, I am English, so surely I should get an A. Yeah, but also dyslexic, so fuck. So yeah.
How's your German now?
Scheiße. it's not sehr gut. I love languages, but fuck me, no, it's not coming round. It's like my brain works on, I don't know, it's like saying, oh, telling a mechanic to learn ballet. It's like, mm-hmm. there may be a small chance that they have a little bit of Billy Elliot inside them and they're going to tap off down the road, but there's also a good chance that they're just going to be covered in grease and stay with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I'm at. It's like, my brain works in I love technical stuff. I love breaking things apart, and languages, I don't know, socially awkward, so it doesn't make it easier to fail at talking to someone. It's what they always say, you know, like, get pissed, start a conversation. And everyone, when they're pissed, like, I don't know, everyone seems to speak better foreign languages.
Right.
But, yeah. Oh, God, there was a time when we were in...
Are you out of here?
Oh, okay. Not TJ is not leaving.
Jump in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've got one loaded.
Do you need us to switch out your laundry or something?
No, I'm working on it now, so that's what
I'll do. So, yeah, we can... If you got something ready, we can throw the next one in, or...
Nah, it's okay.
Okay.
Cool. All right, buddy. Good to see you, buddy. Later. Take it easy.
See your letters.
Yeah, languages.
I remember this time, my brother worked at Sky Sports, and one of his colleagues was this little Welsh dwarf, fucking brilliant guy, like Rodri Jeremiah. It's like a name out of like...
Rodri.
And he was just a, I don't know, awesome little dude. He's like, so he had dwarfism, but he seemed to back it up with loads of fun stuff. Like, he was a really caring and nice guy. And his family had this little house out in, I want to say Nice. It's like near Monaco, south of France.
Yeah, that's Nice is near there.
And so he's like, oh, we should go over there for a holiday. And we go over. None of us, we're all like city boys at this point, and no one can speak French. Apart from Rodri, who he was like Welsh boy, but could speak a little bit of French. Super conscious about it. So we go over there, and we we managed to convince a guy to drive us to this club. And we happened to be in Nice at the time where there's no taxis running. It's like taxis holiday. It's crazy. There's like all the taxi ranks closed, no taxi drivers around. So we get this guy to drive us there, and we spend this night in a club, and we're like, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll be done at 2 o'clock. We'll be done at, like, come and pick us up. And it's a good hour drive to this place, so it's not piss take. And we've been drinking, and Rodri's chatting French to this guy, going, yeah, like, oh, like, Francais, Francais, Francais. And we get there. We all get hammered. We come out at 5 o'clock in the morning, and there is no way to get back.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden, Rodri's French has disappeared. Like, when the soberness kind of comes in, he's like, oh, no, I don't speak it. And I always think back to that. It's like that. You need that courage or, like, that ego almost to learn a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you need even more to use it. Because I'm constantly scared of, like, making mistakes and someone going, that's not how you say this. Mm-hmm. In regular life, I'm like, oh, fuck everyone. I don't give a shit. It's like, whatever, fine. But as soon as you're actually dealing with a stranger, it makes it really difficult. So I'd love to learn the language properly just so I can speak to my neighbors.
Yeah.
But up until this point, I just smile and point at stuff, and they do the same. So.
Yeah. The Brian and I have memorized noises in German that get us responses, but when they deviate from the anticipated response, then I panic. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah, you get like a kernel error and shut down. It does not compute.
My French is decent, but I don't get to practice it much in Germany. And
you're not trying hard enough.
Right. But I had a time in Chamonix, in fact. I went to the store in the morning before everybody got up and got coffees and got croissants. And I was like, yeah, trois cafés. Deux croissants, and I said, like, croissant au chocolat. Ooh. And he stops, and he's like, in English, he goes, oh, no, it is pain au chocolat. I my face got all red. I was like, I'm never fucking speaking French again, ever. I was like,
that's the point. If you were pissed, you go, no, I want a chocolate croissant.
Yeah. Yeah. Take my money.
Take my French coins. I'd love to, but there's points, and I think, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I assume everyone else's life, like, there's a point where you realize that as much as you want something, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get it. Mm-hmm. And it's not a problem, it's not a big deal. It's like, there's actually a little bit of freedom at going, yeah, I'm never going to be able to speak Swiss German, or German.
Are you going to have to do that eventually for, like, a residency type thing, or how's that?
Well, the missus is doing hers, and I'm kind of hoping that by default I just get a passport and a big flag that says, well done, Jack. But chances of that are pretty slim.
It won't be a passport, but it'll be a sweet, sweet visa.
You
don't have to worry about.
I mean, piece of paper. Visa. It could be like a... anything that says you're allowed to be here, with not a strict
with your
deadline.
Swiss wife.
Yeah, I am definitely going to change her name to like Heidi or.
She could be Lisa
Kreutz.
Yeah, I was gonna say Foitz or Kreutz. Yeah,
that's what I was meant to say.
Almond Foitz is another popular one around here.
Yeah. Oh, the old Von Almonds. Mm-hmm. You've got the Von Almonds with two L's and the ones with one L's.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones with one L's are like the snobs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, what about Lisa Brunin?
Lisa Brunin.
Lisa Brunin.
As long as you don't get to see a Tal.
Tal Museum.
I just figured it's stupid stuff. None of it's relevant.
Yeah. Well, I remember when you turned up, we were really excited to get to know you. And we could tell very quickly that you were going to be just fine.
That's nice to know.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we all went home after first meeting you and be like,
yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, in fact, I think there was a group chat conversation about it. I was like, yeah, he's good.
Yep.
You did good, Lise.
Ah, that's nice. I always suspected that, but I didn't think it was going to be positive. we talked about it briefly before, but that's what sold it for me moving here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though none of you guys actually live here, which is weird. It's like, I shall go to this place where all of my friends could be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that moment, right, where I used to think it was just in films, like, I found my family. Like, I didn't necessarily find my family. I just found a lot of people that I like to call my family that also have a really dark sense of humor. And I mean, what's family when
right.
when you start pointing out the small details?
Yeah. It's definitely, Lauterbrunn changed my life for sure.
Actually, yeah, because that's the thing that I never really thought. Like, I came in and just thought, oh, yeah, everyone's already going. I never thought to question, like, how it, like, the equivalent of me coming here. Like, mm-hmm. what was it like for you?
So I met Lisa on one of my first trips here. But I was passing through Stuttgart on my way to Africa. And
that's a long way around.
Yeah. And it was a long year. It was a good year. Man, it was a good year. But I was only supposed to be in Stuttgart for 5 days, but there were some political challenges with the country that they wanted me to go to, and so I got stuck in Stuttgart for 6 weeks. And I had a rental car and
This is before you lived in Stuttgart.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah,
yeah. I was still in Hawaii at the time, and so I knew I was going to be gone for a year, and so I brought a Sky rig, at least one base rig, all my camera equipment. I brought all of my gear. Got my D license so that if I went to a new drop zone, people would kind of like not give me shit. Scott got ready, got an AAD put in my Sky rig so that I could jump at drop zones that required that. But T saw that one of our friends was in Lauterbrunnen, and she was like, hey, that's only like 4 or 5 hours away from Stuttgart, and you have a base rig. And I was like, oh, and I have a car with free gas in it. And so five out of six weekends, I ended up down here. And
oh,
then,
no way.
Yeah, and so I finally get to Africa, and I'm FaceTiming with Brian. And he got an opportunity to come over to Stuttgart, and I was like, take it. Like, I'm already networking, trying to figure out how I'm going to get back there. And that's so by 13, he was here. Yeah, I was 12.
May 1st.
When I first came here.
Yeah, because you came back from Africa. I high-fived you.
Mm-hmm.
And
in Hawaii,
here.
Yeah.
I love it. The 3 points. You came back from Africa. I high-fived you.
And
you
fucking
left.
Yeah, and somewhere...
And then I came.
So somewhere in there, I introduced Brian to base jumping. That was before I went to Africa, right?
We did one trip.
Yeah.
Before you went to Africa.
And then you went on one without
and then
me. You
me
and T. Yeah.
Went and met up with Jamie and those guys over at the bridge before you got back.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, cool. See ya. And I'm going to go over here and see what's happening.
And now we're here doing a podcast.
Here we are.
10 years later.
11 years from when I first came here, yeah.
Yeah.
10 years later.
Wow. I was just a teenager back then.
I wasn't.
Definitely wasn't, no. No.
You're in your 30s.
Doing some brain math.
I said you hated math. Case in point.
I should be. Nope.
But yeah, like because I knew who Dan was, and then I met because I sat across from Lisa on a train down. Like they back when Club Med used to be in Vingen, they would have these all you could eat, all you could drink for like 50 francs, and somehow somebody would give like the base jumpers the hookup, and like when they weren't at capacity, and so we would go and just, I mean, we would drink 50 francs worth of booze alone, and then eat like champions. And then usually they'd have some kind of like game thing, and we were already, and we usually the jumpers won because you're competing against like families, you know. Like, yeah.
Family of trained athletes. Right?
But yeah, sat across from Lisa on one of the trains down. She had dreads back then. She had like dreads in the back and bangs in the front kind of going on.
Yeah, it was awful.
That's like the hippie version of a mohawk. Not mohawk. Mullet.
Mullet.
Yeah, it's like, got the dreads at the back and bangs at the front.
Yep. Yeah. Party in the front.
Shit locks in the back.
Doo-doo hair in the back.
Just been dragging these hairy turds around for the last 10 years.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Had no clue back then that we'd be here now, but it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, though, isn't it? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you could look at it in the same way as anything. Like, when you look back at something, like, who would have thought we got here? But it's not crazy. It's kind of nice. It's nice that it's, like, for all the chance and fate and twists and turns and stuff, all the decisions that get made, like, all of a sudden it's here. So...
Yeah, when you talked about like the serial hobbies, and like I feel like I went through a phase after I broke my leg the second time, because that recovery was so long that I kind of filled the base space with other things, and it's taken. I mean, what I did a few jumps. It's 21 is when I did my first base jump after being injured. 22, I did a little bit of jumping. And now this year I'm finally like...
What's a little bit?
10 jumps.
Did you? Did you make it to 10?
Yeah. I mean, I went to Estonia and I knocked out some there. I did some here.
You did 4 there.
Whatever.
I've you also even had there. Sex with 100 women. Is it the same? Divide it by 7 or 3.
But I mean, you weren't really current.
No.
Like this year you're actually like coming down more than... Like
yeah.
Once.
Yeah, month. and that's actually a nice segue because I signed up for that marathon. It's like, oh, I need to get here and be here and do some training, and then might as well jump while I'm here. And
you've been doing that like in tenfold, like just being here this weekend, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Say weekend.
I ended up getting 6 today, like 2-3 2-mile runs, and then 7 yesterday. And then 1 jump yesterday, 2 jumps today. I'm like in love with, 2-piece tracking suits again.
Oh,
it's,
nice.
It's like driving a vintage Porsche or something, you know, it's like, it's not as fast as the new ones. It's not as high performance, but it's still fun. And I feel like it's within acceptable margins considering that I haven't skydived since 2018.
I feel like that's like a little bit of a trick to life, though. There's always that thing where, I mean, my industry before I moved here, everything was about technology. Like, what's the latest thing? How can we use it? And Brian and I were talking about AI and how it's going to affect digital media and things that are going to change with production and stuff. And sometimes it actually just boils down to like, what's kind of fun. Like when I used to skate, it wasn't about like going off the biggest ramps and how many like fucking flips you could do, and it was like cruising and finding your groove. And sometimes it reminds you that you're not doing it for anyone else. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it's just for you, and that's cool. Like I always like that. I like when people just do things that kind of tick their boxes, and sometimes it ticks other people's as well. Like if some people are looking in at it and going, yeah, man, that guy's really cool. Like, great. But if that guy that's doing really cool stuff is going home and stressing about stuff. And I always used to think that about the first time I met Yoki. It was like, he's sponsored by Red Bull. And the amount of people that were talking about him being like, yeah, yeah, he's like a superhero and stuff. I was like, cool, like. But when I saw him and we were all up at the pub and stuff, and he's on his laptop and he's surrounded by amazing people, I was like, yeah, maybe it's working for him, and it's no diss to his decisions or anything like that. But just using him as an example, like at what point does a computer at a table full of really cool people be like the equivalent of like technology get in the way. So like sometimes jump in a two piece mm-hmm. and just like cruising that classic Porsche, right? Like that should be a you experience and a fun thing. So yeah. It's nice to hear you say that as well.
Yeah, it's been fun. And we'll see. Maybe I'll put on a one piece next season. But yeah, this season I'm dedicated to just standard valley jumps and two piece tracksuit. And like this morning we did John and TJ were in wingsuits and we did a little three way. And we did a pretty good one yesterday, but this morning's one was really cool because they followed me off and just stayed in a steep dive. And then like both of them like passed me, like as I was starting to like level out and actually move a little bit, like they sort of flared out and just zoomed past me like simultaneously. It was such a cool visual. It was one of those times where I was like, man, I wish I wore a camera, but like that visual is in my head for the rest of my life. Like I'll never forget that. Like,
yeah. It was cool. Classic like Schrodinger's camera. It's there and it's not, but what's important.
Yeah.
Also, the cat's dead.
Not your cat.
It's not dead unless you open the box to see that it's dead.
Now you're getting it. Now you're getting it.
When did you run your first Jungfrau Marathon? Because you've done it a couple times now, right?
Yeah, I forget the years because everything's a bit of a blur, but it was the 2 years before Corona because I signed up for the third year and then Corona hit. And that, the first year Corona one got cancelled completely. And then everyone's applications, kind of their numbers and stuff, they just got automatically shifted to the next year. So I'm guessing 18 and 19.
Okay.
That seems like it would make sense. So, I think it was that. But can't remember exactly.
Yeah, and what was your take on it? How did you feel about the experience?
I mean, I was running a lot at that point. Like, I was still living in London for the first time, the first one. So, yeah, no, that would make sense. It was 2018. So the first year I was living in London and I hated public transport, like getting into central London from West London in like rush hour traffic was a pain in the ass. So I'd get up maybe about 15 minutes early and then running, and I was doing about 130-ish kilometers a week.
Wow.
So, and it was super easy as well because it was like 11 or 12 kilometers into work, and then I was in this mentality that I didn't want to just sit at my desk and eat because it's a really bad attitude and bad habit. So I'd go to the gym and just run on a treadmill, and some days I'd do 5k, some days I'd do 10, and some days I'd get a load of work done and I'd do a 20k run, and then I'd run home. So on a busy day, I could have done sort of like 35, 40K of running. So I'd do a marathon in a day just to get in and out of work and avoid being at my desk. But on bad days, like if I was hungover or you did a late night and stuff, you'd still get like maybe 10 to 15K of running done. So when I came over here, It was more of a shock to the system about the altitude, like running at altitude, but also running uphill. And that was the biggest thing to get used to, because at the time I was like, yeah, I'm a pro. I could run anything. I could run on fire and sort of, I could punch a bear sort of attitude. But you get here and it's like very neutral, and here's a mountain. It's not going to fight back, but it's not going to make it easy. So in classic style, we spent a night at the Horner before the marathon.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we were smoking joints and drinking beers. I think I was probably about 6 or 7 beers deep. And then me, Gibbsy, and Lisa went back to the house, and some other stuff came out, and they carried on, and I tried to get to sleep. I think I fell asleep at around about 4 o'clock, and I was up at 6, and then we did the marathon.
God, so, I think I forgot those details.
Oh, yeah, no, that was the first one, and I mean, I've always quite enjoyed the underdog mentality. So when I'm hungover, it only seems to bring the emotions a little bit closer. And I always used to run with this attitude that, like, if you're struggling, like, kind of channel into your brain and find something that, like, means something to you. So it'd always be like, oh, imagine if this person that you loved was, like, in a trapped building and you had to get in, and it just, like, but you're tired and you can't do it. It's like, and you'd always get this little motivation. At the same time, I think it was just distracting you from how tired and worn out you were from running.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I remember how impressed I was that you were pounding a beer in front of the shed as you were running.
That was the second year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Was it the second?
I think that was
and
the
first.
Because the first one,
because we met you at the top for the first one.
Yes.
We didn't meet you at the top for the second one, right?
No, it was a lonely one for the second.
Yeah, because we were like, you'd already proven yourself. Yeah. Like,
hooray, I finished.
Yeah, you did
no
it again.
No one loves me.
Because we played music out by the shed.
We hung out at the shed, and you
stopped. Day drank.
And you, like, pounded a beer with us, and then we were like, oh, my God, he's in a machine.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
didn't realize that you were just still on a, like, full bender.
Well, the second year that I did it, it wasn't quite as intense as the first year because, yeah, there was definitely, like, about halfway through the first year, there was some serious cramps kicking in. So I think, like, all the diuretics that I was consuming the night before were not contributing to peak performance. But also, like, when you drink a load of beer, you got a load of carbohydrates. They turn into sugars. You got energy. Like, it's not great for your heart, but I'm not going to be around for 100 years. Like, so, but yeah, that second year, it's like, the first year it was a bottle of Corona. And it was, Nick ran down from, he was living above the post office in Lauterbrunnen. And he ran down, he was like, hey, I got your beer, as a joke, and I snatched it off him and started drinking. But in a bottle, whilst you're running, it fizzes up and goes everywhere. Like, so half of it's, like, splurged over my face and over my top and that. So I had to stop at Airtime Cafe, where Lisa and a few other people were, to, like, finish it off, and then carried on running. But it was the second year, what we chugged the beer at the shed.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a can of Felschlossen or something.
Something.
And then Grainy was up at the Falcon in Bengen and handed me a Dunkel. You know, one of those dart beers, the pop tops.
Oh, no.
And I was like, ah, oh, cheers. And I took a swig and I was like, it's like drinking treacle whilst you're trying to run. Oh. So, and I think when you get to the Bengen point, like, you've done most of the hard work, to be honest. Like, after that, it's still really difficult. Don't get me wrong. It's, like, it's not easy. But it's very much a case of, like, you've gone up from Lauterbrunnen to Wengen on that super steep part. Like, the Van Veg that goes from past Stucki, is it the train station way and then all the way up? That's the ball breaker. That's where you saw so many people just sort of, like, holding their calves, feeling the cramps kicking in and stuff, because it goes from here's a load of flat running and you're halfway through a marathon, just over, and then all of a sudden, like, 30 odd degrees sort of going up, and it's not fun. And meanwhile, all these, like, super athletic people are just kind of going, like, powering on, like, yeah, I'm doing it. And you got these little old women that were just sort of power walking faster than the other people because everyone's still trying to run. And it was really interesting because it's that, to me, I saw it as this mentality of you're in a race, so you've got to run. And then you saw this little old woman who was not, like, she had 2 feet on the floor at all times. And you got these guys that are, like, 6 foot, like, kind of spending 90% of their time in the air springing, and they're moving slower than this other person. It's like when I was running with Randy before, I was like changing the way that you run. You're going downhill, take big, long, kind of like galloping strides as long as your knees can take it. And then when you're going uphill, like kind of turn into a little millipede, like take these little tiny steps and do them fast. And it takes a load of pressure off your calves and it makes everything a little bit easier. But yeah, I mean, in general, I didn't really know what I was expecting because the first marathon I ever did was the Jungfrau. Mm. The second one was the Jungfrau. The third one I didn't do. So I've done two, that's it.
Like, yeah.
But I like the challenge. So as soon as I started doing it and I was like, ooh, this is harder than I was expecting, I'm not about to admit that to anyone. I'm not going to go, oh, this was a terrible decision. I wish I hadn't drank so much last night.
Huge mistake.
And for me, it turned around. I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to power on through this. And then all of a sudden, you got the energy. You find your own little path. So it was a good blast.
Yeah. Like when I was in college and in early Marine Corps days, I could take the PFT, the physical fitness test, and do really well on no sleep and still maybe a little drunk. But that's also only 3 miles. But you also have to get up stupid early to do it. And so, yeah. But, I was, after I signed up, I was like, oh, I think I made a mistake, but now I'm just like committed.
I don't think you have actually, because when I first heard you signed up, I was like, oh, Randy. And I was telling Brian, I was like, I thought that when you went to the gym and all the stories about you talking about the gym anyway, I just assumed that's on me. Like you just lift weights or you...
Oh, yeah, because I'm so jacked, you can tell.
But no, I thought it was more... I didn't think it was aerobic.
Yeah, so I only started really running again this year, but early this year. I used to run in high school and I had to run in college in the Marine Corps, but... I got into cycling because, you know, the whole leg thing and the impact because after I got the metal taken out and I started running, like it would swell up and stuff. And I was like, oh, I need to do something else.
Yeah.
And then I started playing around with it when I was visiting my parents because they have a really nice trail over by their house. And I was like, oh, my leg's not swelling up. I think I can do more of this. And I feel like there's three aspects to fitness. It's cardio, resistance training, and it's mobility. So I try and have a healthy dose of those three things. Because we've been traveling so much, I haven't actually lifted weights in almost a month now. But I've been keeping the cardio, right? Yeah, yeah. Carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders or some shit. But I have to stretch every morning. Like I have to do about 20 minutes of yoga just because I have not treated this vessel very well. So,
that's one thing that I wish I had more patience for because I'd love to do more stretching, more yoga, like because I see how important that sort of stuff is. Used to have a friend that I worked with who was like a bodybuilder. And he was like, yeah, like he had a 56-inch chest and he was a few inches shorter than me. And yeah, not everyone needs to be a certain way, right? But he had so much of this passion about how important strength was. And one of the biggest problems that I found is we were moving office one day and we had to carry a load of these tiles because as we were renovating this other studio. And he's like, yeah, pile them all on. And he could lift them. He could bench press like 250 kilos. This guy was like a machine, but he had no stamina. And you take one of those 3 points, right? And you do too much of it and you're neglecting the other part. So you need the maneuverability, you need the kind of the cardio side and you do need the strength. But if you go too far one way,
If you can bench press a car, but you can't wipe your ass because you can't turn around. Like,
I mean, that's a much easier way of putting it. Yeah. I wish I'd been so poetic as you. Yeah. Oh, no, actually, that's a good point, because he used to have this haircut, right, where it was, like, trimmed all on the sides, and he had this little tuft on the top. And we used to joke about it, saying, like, because that was the only part that he could reach, because he was like, ooh, and his arms would get up, and he'd just be like a tiny little bit of gel on the top. So,
yeah.
Not quite wiping your ass, but, you know.
That's Jack-a-doodle in 2018.
Wow. That's a nice shot.
Sorry. Oh, no beard, nothing.
Got a nice stash.
Yeah.
Does anybody need another beer?
No.
Yeah.
Do you want to get me a beer?
I'm getting close. Anyone want to go for a piss for me?
And we're back.
Back, yeah. I
don't know how Joe Rogan goes for 3 hours, like, without... I have, like, a 40-minute bladder when I'm fully hydrated, but I'm definitely not today.
I was always one of those, that, you know, people say, oh, you broke the seal. It's like, I broke the seal when I was born. I've been pissing since. Ain't no problem with a toilet break, though.
Nah, just cut that. Yeah, so the, a lot of trudging. So tell me about the, from Vingen to Kleine Scheidegg, because I haven't, I mean, I've seen pieces of that over time, but I wasn't looking at it through the lens of someone that was going to have to do it for time.
It's beautiful. I think that's what it is. Like that, when I say, like, when once you're up to Vingen, that's, it doesn't get easier, but mentally there's a point where you kind of switch and you realize how beautiful of a marathon you're actually running. It's.
But are you actually running, or are you just hiking at that point?
No, you are, I mean, not running, like,
I'm
it's
just like, is your heart not exploding if you're trying to, like, jog up the hill?
I think at that point, like, if you've made it that far, you're kind of almost a little bit conditioned. Like, it's still, like, you're sweating, you got the aches, you've got all the pains, but you've also had just enough time to kind of get used to it. So it's not like all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm going to pop. Right? The best way I could kind of describe it is, like, you know, if you guys are going hiking to an exit and it's a, like the mushroom, like, I feel like the emotional part at the start of the journey, like, you know how far you've got to go, is the biggest burden, because you've got the most energy at that point, right? And then as you get closer, the emotional burden kind of goes down, but the physical burden goes up.
True. So you but get... I never jog.
No.
I'm literally just, like, one foot in front of the other, like, and hard then, plodding.
Yeah. And in kind of, in a strange way, it's kind of the same. Like,
in Mushroom, we use sticks, and they made it very clear that there is no sticks for the Jungfrau Marathon.
I hated that because, yeah, the first time I was training and I ran up to Kleine Scheidegg from Steckelberg, I used sticks, and I was like, wow, this is... And I'd never used sticks before, like, even for hiking. I was like, what is this magic? I was like, it's like, I understand why Gandalf had a big old stick. So... Yeah. It's not trudging. It's like there's this, like, every bend you come around, there's something else to look at. There's something else to distract you from this kind sucked. Of what you're doing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm making it sound really fancy. I'm hoping to make it sound fancier than it is. But, I mean, there is a part of it which is just trudging. But... Like I say, it's on the most beautiful thing. So trudging turns into, like, a weird, beautiful trudge. So you're still knackered. You're still getting shit on, but it's just a little bit more beautiful. So yeah.
Did you wear, like, a vest thingy like I was wearing today, or is it just how? Are those allowed? Even I don't even know.
Yeah, yeah, no, you can wear whatever. You just can't have something which is gonna disrupt other runners.
Okay.
So things like sticks, because you've seen what people are like with skis in the winter, like the old British tourists coming around being like, "Oh, Jeremy, let's go over to the Jungfrau," and they do a 90 and take about 6 people out with the giant skis.
Mm.
It's the same. It's like, but you can wear like the water bottle jackets. You can have a camel pack. I did the Geneva one with Erin, and there was a woman dragging a fucking tire.
What?
It was like she was running, and she had like a harness on with two ropes, and she was dragging a small tire. And it was like, she didn't do the whole marathon. It was just a half marathon that she was doing. But I think it was like a charity thing. And it's like, put in the extra effort. It's symbolic.
Yeah.
She wasn't there to do the best time, but it was funny because everyone,
clearly.
But it was also slightly disturbing that we took over about halfway through it. So I was like, wait, when did she start? How did this work?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's not just about you, and it's not just about the running. It's about, like, you get in there, and every now and again there's like this little point, and farmers and strangers and stuff, like Swiss people, they're going hop 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 hop, and then, like, when you were running through Stegvila the other day, like with all the water troughs,
mm-hmm.
like the passion of the people there, you start running and you're like, oh, I'm knackered. And you go, I'm going to run a little bit harder for him. Like, you don't think that. It's like more of a hindsight thing. You get that little, it's like someone just kind of giving you a push on the back saying, mm-hmm. you got this. I know you're fucked and you don't want to do it, but just keep going because you'll get there. And you get that little burst of energy. And then just as it dies away, you come around the corner and there's like a brass band going, bop, 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 bop. And you're like, oh, what the fuck is this music? But hey, yeah, I'm going to run a bit more. Like, so, yeah, there's a lot to it. And I think doing it twice doesn't give me enough experience or qualification to, like...
Well, it's two more times than I've done it. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like... Oh, there was a guy that we were looking to buy a house off, and he's done it every year for the last 20 something years.
Wow!
Like, he looks like a human that's had sex with a scorpion and given birth to like some weird bone spider. Like, he's not like I've got a load of flesh on me. He looks like
Skeletor.
Yeah, Skeletor. That would be a way better way of putting it. But at the same time, like, that's what I was saying about, like, the triangle of fitness, right?
Yeah.
If you're just running all the time, like, great, you've got an amazing stamina, but just to be in that, like, perfect little balance. I mean, it's everyone's decision, right? Mm-hmm. Some people just want to be jacked. Other people want to run and be a stick insect. And then there's so many... white middle class women that want to be bendy for yoga and stuff. So,
yeah, I like to keep that like a nice even try. I mean, granted, I mean, who are we kidding? There's a level of vanity that goes with some of the resistance training, I guess you could say. But
as well as it bloody should do. Yeah. That's the reason why we do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I exercise for two reasons. I've said this for years: one, to look good naked, and two, to survive a traumatic accident. Because I feel like the better shape you're in, the better your odds are if the ground hits you too hard that you're going to live. So.
I think I got a bit confused because I was blurring the two. I was like, you look good naked when you're in an accident.
A traumatic naked accident.
You look better for the trauma nurse that's cutting your clothes off.
Yeah, you're like that. Check out this.
Yeah. The
washboard abs.
Yeah. Well, after...
Look at this vascularity.
After 7 days in a Swiss hospital, eating one good meal a day and having like yogurt and bread in the morning, I saw my abs again for the first time in a while. So, I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that all it took?
Yeah. Yeah, just laying in a bed and eating only like 1,000 calories a day.
Sweet. I'm going to lay in bed and eat 1,000 calories instead of... running up a mountain.
Watch Netflix and YouTube. And
yeah, I think you've got the right idea, yeah, Brian.
Sounds,
like, that's the way
good.
To do it. Like, oh no, someone's feeding me and I don't have to move and I can see my abs.
Yeah, I didn't know.
People need to go to hospital.
Yeah, well, because I didn't get up until the last day, so I didn't even see him until we went. Brian picked me up and we went directly to your... No, do we have food first? I think we had food in Interlaken, and then we went to Lisa's house. I was like, I just need a bath. Like, I just lift my leg out of the tub and just dunked my whole body. I was like, I just need to, because taking bird baths for a week, and they didn't tell me that they were putting soap in the water for the first round. And so like, and I was like, oh no, I'm good. And like my skin started breaking out and stuff. And then I realized after 4 or 5 days, I was like, oh, there's soap in that water. Like I saw it, she prepped it in front of me. And I was like, oh, that's why I'm breaking out. I need clean water to see. So, yeah, was a weird rabbit hole.
The joys of being broken.
Yeah. And not speaking Swiss German. Cause one of the nurses, had dated a base jumper.
Oh yeah, I remember
and
that.
It was like, I don't know if they asked, if she asked to like go to a different section or something. I didn't see her the rest of the time I was in there.
But she was scared of your abs.
Yeah, I didn't have abs the first time I saw her.
Oh, there we go. That's the other reason.
Yeah, because if I had abs, then maybe.
She's like, I don't want to be around this ugly guy.
But,
Last time I saw my abs, it was the first time I ever took MDMA. And no one gave me any guidance to what was going to happen. And all I did was strip down to my boxers, clean the entire flat, and then do 1,000 sit-ups. And then
Were you cleaning and doing sit-ups at the flat?
Because that's where I took MDMA.
By yourself?
By yourself?
Yeah.
What? Why?
Again, no one gave me any guidance. I was like, I honestly,
you didn't realize that MDMA might be a social drug and not a sit at the house
by yourself
drug?
And just feel
not,
things?
Not necessarily. Like, when you put it like that, it sounds like I'm an idiot. But, yeah, no. Yeah. This is kind of going back to like the whole speaking German.
Yeah.
It's a social anxiety. It's like, I can't have fun unless I've tried it before.
Mm.
And it's like the first time you try acid or the first time you do anything. The first time you even learn to drive, it doesn't have to be drugs or music. It's
a little test.
Yeah. And that little test turned out to be much stronger than what I realized. Mm. It's like, honestly, I got this huge rock and I scraped it with a little scalpel and I put it in a bottle of Lucozade, which is like a fizzy glucose drink in the UK. And at the time I was doing some animation for F1. So I was like doing some opening credits for an outtake thing for a Formula One racing. And my brother was the producer who was sat in the other room because I lived it with him. And I took this thinking, like, oh, it might just be like a little pick-me-up, a little buzz, sort of thinking it was more of like an amphetamine
Like a Red Bull.
Yeah, like powdered Red Bull. And I went into my brother's room about like an hour after it kicked in, and I was just like, do you know what, Rob? I absolutely love this work. I love you. Everything's great. I don't know what's going on, but I'll see you in a bit. And he left. And then it just kept going. This was like about 5 or 6 o'clock. It wasn't that late. And I remember going to sleep at about 10 o'clock in the morning in the hallway after I dragged a double mattress in, and I just slept like I was into this soft, squishy taco shell. But yeah, it was like not being told what it did. Everything that came to my mind, like, oh, you should do this and you should do this. And everything felt so much more natural.
Mm.
Now, when I look back at it, it was like, okay, it's like being drunk or stoned or, I don't know, just excited. You do stupid stuff, like someone points a camera at you. It's like, oh, no, I've been there before. Like, I'm not doing a flip again because last time I sprained my ankle sort of vibe. But back then it was like, cool. And yeah, I had two toothbrushes in the bathroom, and I was doing one toothbrush was for vertical grout and one toothbrush was for horizontal grout.
Pow, pow, pow. So maybe you did get some like speed laced
Could have been.
Because it was just like,
yeah. I mean,
let me do 1,000 sit-ups.
Yeah. Well, after the sit, like, what was it? The third year of being in Switzerland, got finally diagnosed with ADD, and that's kind of when I realized that certain things affect me in a different way. Mm. So, which is why I've always been super scared about doing certain types of things with certain people and stuff. But in general, it was always like alcohol and caffeine that chills me out. Like, it calms me down. Like, some people, it makes them super angry. But when it then came to stuff that I had no experience in, everything seemed to have a different effect. Like, first time I took acid, it was relating to the job that I was working on. All the mountains just looked like this one guy. And it was really disturbing, but in an interesting way. Because I knew he wasn't there really. But he was.
So, before we wrap, I would like to wish you a happy Independence Day.
Independence!
Yes, America. Tomorrow is 4th of July, which is when we celebrate our break from...
Insurrection Day.
Insurrection Day. Also, I don't know if you'll listen to this, but shout out to Jamie Flynn, who jokingly said, "Make America Great Britain Again." I was like, oh, that's catchy.
Yeah, but then it'd be Donald Fart. Because that's what we call a Trump.
That's pretty close.
It's incredibly smart, and it's over your head, so don't worry if you don't get it. Nah, it's not. It's just me being silly.
But... yeah, man. Thanks for the chat. I want to do this again. You know, we should, whenever, open invite.
I rant on about random shit, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Nothing to apologize for. That's why the idea is that the guest does most of the speaking.
I also shit myself, so I'm sorry about that.
I didn't. I almost reset my shit clock today on that exit. I was super gassy and was like, I don't know.
I know we're going to rap, but this is something that I've really got to talk about.
We don't have to rap. I mean, we could.
I know. I feel like this is a good one to rap on anyway.
Okay.
I am constantly surprised about how many people tell me how often they shit themselves.
Right? People shouldn't shit themselves that often.
Yeah, it's like, even before, like,
I made it, like, 20 plus years and never shit myself. And then, like, did it twice in a couple of years and was just like, what's going on?
Yeah, I was lying in bed with my wife and she's like, oh, yeah, Sam shit himself twice this week. And I was like...
In one week? Wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, I understand that it happens, but maybe this is my relation to the whole social anxiety thing. Like, I am more anxious about shitting myself. So I will put myself through hours and hours of agonizing gut pain, holding it in, and I turn my sphincter into a cast iron, like, I don't know.
Mm.
What's the wall in Lord of the Rings called? It's basically
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones is the wall.
Or Game of Thrones.
There's a giant wall.
Yeah,
it's funny that there's a lot of walls in mythical stories, but break down the walls.
Right. Yeah,
yeah. I'm just surprised because there's a lot of people shitting themselves, and that's where we're at.
Yeah, I mean that may or may not have had something to do with why I quit drinking in January, from January to April, but. That's
See,
either here
this
or there.
Is why we need to look into it. We need scientific studies about how people poop their pants.
We need more comments in the comment section about how often you poop your pants.
Oh, there's there a comment section.
I don't know.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there is. I just never see that stuff.
No, he's just joking. We do. Yeah, and keep commenting because it's great.
Yeah, 4 stars. Like and follow and whatever the... They
click and subscribe.
There you go.
If you haven't mashed the button yet,
hit that whatever.
Right after you
check out the show notes.
Right after you shit yourself.
Yeah. I would like to put a link to the Metier Designs Instagram in the show notes if that's cool with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I'm actually working on finally bringing out the new website as well because, yeah, it's fun and it's supposed to be good stuff and, yeah, some things people can't afford, some things we can make them affordable. It's mm-hmm. just, it's meant to be there to make people's lives better. That's the main thing, so by selling them stuff that maybe they don't need.
But maybe they want, and that's all that matters.
Like another Ghanaian.
The Ghanaian
Ghana friendship bracelet. Please, take one. Take them all.
I like them.
You could, in fact, we could probably sell these to tourists out of...
The Lauterbrunnen and beads of prayer.
Yeah.
So, hey, listen, cool. it was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jack.
So, yeah, anytime.
It's been a lot of fun. It's about time we got you on. Because, you know, there's so much to, I call this the Bass Life podcast, and you are absolutely a part of not just my bass life because you were there, you know, even when I was broken and not jumping, you know, that didn't change with anything with my close friends. It was cool with everybody, even during the time when I wasn't sure that I was going to come back to jumping. You know, nothing changed.
Yeah, and so it should be, right?
Like, yeah.
And that's more of a credit to you, though.
Yeah. Well, and the friends that it's like, people, you know, like, you don't have to worry. I feel like the base friendships that we make are really deep. And, yeah. And so I appreciate you being a part of that, being a positive influence in my life.
Ah, hey, anytime.
Give me some Jungfrau guidance.
And, the feeling's mutual. I think that's one of the things, right? Like, you always look at the other people and be like, oh, they're my friend, and thank you to them. And I think a lot of the time, most people seem to forget how important they are. Like, because I wouldn't be friends with you if you were a dick. Doesn't matter how nice I am. Like, I could be, like, Buddha reincarnated, but if you're an arsehole, you're an arsehole. So, also give yourself a bit of credit. Like, good people are good people, and there's a lot of good people out there.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, 100%. 100%.
99%, because there's always those other types.
Right, yeah.
Which we don't talk about.
Cool.
No, appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, same. So, this is the part where I like to wish Steve a good night. Good night, Steve.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
Good night, Steve.
All right, well, sleep tight.
This was,
angel.
Yeah. Tomorrow's a new day. Something. All right. This has been a Bass Life podcast. We're out.
Woo.
All right. If you want to know more about our guests, just check out the show notes. And if you want to give us some feedback or reach out to us, you can hit us at basslife2014@gmail.com. facebook.com/thebasslife, and on Instagram we're @base.life. All right, thanks.